it'll be recorded on my phone, and hopefully it comes out good. All right, so we left off with Diem in charge of Vietnam. Dien, of course, had many, many issues. Are you Matt?
Yeah.
You came in late last class too, right?
Yeah.
But you had missed a couple in between.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Actually, we had snow days, so I think you only missed one. All right, so we went through all of the problems that he had. So it's great. He's in the prime minister. He's in charge of this new country, the state of Saigon. It is a constitutional monarchy in theory, because Bo Dai is the emperor, but he's given the authority to basically take control of the country. But as we went through, there was a whole bunch of problems. And I should have just finished, because I did let you go, because I only got a little bit left. I don't know why I stopped. But, anywho, in truth, he didn't control the state of Vietnam. The truth is, he barely controlled the capital city. Because as we said in the beginning, I said, he didn't control the police, he didn't control the army, and he didn't have the ability to control the economy. So, what could he do about it? Well, initially, nothing. The VNA technically was supposed to do what he wanted, but truth be told, they were poorly trained and they were unreliable because many of them supported General Nguyen Van Thi. So, if you have no soldiers, there's even less you can do. So 1954, it looked like this grand experiment would fail. But he got lucky. He had time to figure things out because he had some cover. Because there was no major threat to him, he could just wait things out and see how events unfolded. On one hand, under the Geneva Convention, the French troops would remain in country until 1956. So while he couldn't rely on the VNA, he at least had the French expeditionary forces. So that provided stability. But he got an extra little added bonus. The Central Intelligence Agency. Dwight D. Eisenhower dispatched the CIA to Saigon. And they would establish what officially became known as the Saigon Military Mission. This was a base of operations that operated in and out of Saigon. This operation was spearheaded by Lieutenant General Edward G. Lansdale. Now, Lansdale was an experienced spook. He had engaged in CIA operations in the Pacific region. The biggest success he had was he helped crush a growing communist movement in the Philippines. He also was one of the first CIA operatives that had mastered psychological warfare. So, he would commonly develop psyops to kind of trick the enemy to expose themselves, and then they would get rubbed out. Now, here's the irony. Lansdell seemingly got along with DM. And Lansdell, when he returned back to the United States, frequently talked about how often he would spend nights with Dien over food and drinks. And Dien would bombard him with questions about American history and, you know, American politicians and historical figures, baseball. Well, at the same time, Lansdell would try to put pressure on DM to say, hey, look, you're the leader of your people. You should try leading your people. But most importantly, Lansdell was given command control initially over training the NVA soldiers. So while the batch that Dien inherited were basically buffoons because they were trained by the French, the moment Lansdell got in there, he started basically training special operative forces. He also spent time going out into the villages. And he actually started recruiting Cao-Daist militias. I mean, if the Cao-Dai are out in the countryside and they're organizing, well, let's get them on board. We don't need to send soldiers from Saigon. We can have them go after the communists. He also oversaw a massive propaganda campaign. Millions of leaflets were dropped in North Vietnam for the first 300 days, encouraging Catholics to come south. The most common one had written in Vietnam, Christ has gone to the south. So he was there. So with the combination of the French troops that were there and the support of the CIA, Tiam was okay. Barely got through. Oh, FYI. Why didn't Hin overthrow Diem when he attempted his coup? Lansdowne stopped it. He got word of General Hin bragging that he was going to overthrow Diem. So Lansdowne convinced Diem to basically ship all of Hin's supporters into different parts of the country. Basically broke the coup without even the general realizing what was going on. So, in the end, the CIA propped him up. Questions? All right. So, what was the United States doing? Well, why was the CIA there? Well, ultimately, the CIA was ordered by the administration to basically stop the spread of communism throughout Southeast Asia. So they weren't necessarily there to support the South Vietnamese, they just didn't want that domino to fall. And they let their presence be known. As we covered last class, the administration would spearhead the creation of CETO. CETO officially went into operation on September 8th, 1954. It would be headquartered in Manila. This would be the agency that would work throughout the Pacific Rim to stop the expansion of communism. Now, under the Geneva Convention, South Vietnam, Laos, Cambodia, they could not join. But CETO would provide military protection. So if the North Vietnamese or if the Chi Coms attempted to attack, CETO would respond, like NATO in Europe. But CETO was a defensive-only alliance, like NATO. Under both charters, neither NATO, the North Atlantic Treaty Organization, or CETO, the Southeast Asian Treaty Organization, neither of them justifiably could declare war. They only could respond if a member nation was attacked. And even if a nation was attacked, that didn't mean that the member nations had to send troops. They could send money, they could send weapons, just like NATO. But this mutual aid served to offset Chinese and Soviet expansion. Said that, no standing army. All right, so the goal as far as Vietnam goes was maintaining that 17th parallel. North Vietnamese would stay in the north, state of Vietnam would stay in the south. That is what CETO would commit to. So that's the red line in the sand. All right, so with CETO in place, what about Diem? Well, in October 1954, Ike decides that he's going to support Diem as prime minister. So, under the president's commitment, American officials slowly started stepping in as French officials began to withdraw. Now, FYI, and of course this was not public knowledge, this was only declassified in the last few decades, most of the American agents that were in country in 1954 were reporting to Eisenhower how messed up things were, how corrupt Diem was, and their doubts that this regime would survive. In other words, kind of hinting, maybe we shouldn't waste our money on this. But regardless, the president was a cold warrior. So, he authorized the United States participation in the refugee crisis. He ordered U.S. naval vessels to engage in what is known as Operation Passage to Freedom. There would be 109 U.S. trips between Haiphong and Saigon in which the Americans actually helped move about 300,000 refugees. And of course, most of these refugees were Catholic. MAG was also there, the Military Assistance and Advisory Group. Based on CIA requests, MAG would take over training of the Vietnamese National Army at the end of 1954. When the CIA basically determined the bulk of them were too stupid because of French training, we actually had to bring in American officers to train them in American-style warfare. You know, warfare where you don't surrender, like the French. So, when Diem figured out that Eisenhower was basically giving him cover, Diem would take advantage of that to try to solidify his control over the country. He, again, replaced generals like Hinh, who were not loyal to him, and put in puppets in high-ranking positions in the army. He also began bribing influential politicians, influential religious leaders.
Basically trying to bring them into the fold. Allowing him to get control.
Questions? Well, thanks to the cover provided by the French in the United States, thanks to his own scheming, slowly, day by day, Diem started getting more and more control over the countryside. Helping him was the thousands of Catholics that had fled because of communism. But the problem is the Catholics, even though most of the Vietnamese Catholics were now in the South, the Catholics were still a minority. The majority were Buddhists, or one of the offshoots of Buddhism. And the Buddhists hated the Catholics. So when Diem couldn't rely on the bulk of his people for support, he had to rely on the United States. And what does the United States do? Well, it basically buys the army for him. And the U.S. money is what he used to basically buy control of the government. But that's good only so long as the money remains. Because at the end of the day, the government was not loyal to him. They were loyal to Uncle Sam and the American dollar. By November, the United States starts funneling in millions of dollars. Eisenhower learns of the coup plot, learns how the CIA defused it. Operation Road to Freedom is closing. Passage to Freedom is closing. And Ike wants to kind of know what's going on. So, what does he do? Well, he starts listening to the officials that are over there. And like I said, they were kind of warning the president. This is a money pit. But the most glaring assessment came from one of Eisenhower's old military aides who served side by side with Ike in World War II, General J. Lofton Collins. Ike tapped Collins to serve as U.S. ambassador to Vietnam, or South Vietnam. But Collins also had the unofficial assignment of basically putting military eyes to the day-to-day affairs in Vietnam. Well, Collins was given full access, and apparently he was appalled by what he saw. The Vietnamese government officials were idiots, they were corrupt, they were slimy, they were useless. Diem, long story short, Collins basically described him as a beta male. And he also kind of said he wasn't too smart upstairs. In a quote from his official report to the president, and I quote, Diem does not have the capacity to achieve the necessary unity of purpose and action from his people, which is essential to prevent his country from falling under communist control. It was there. It was obvious. But do you ever meet people who are just damn lucky? Diem got lucky. April 1955, Collins travels to D.C., meets with Ike, and apparently convinces him that Diem had to go. The president and secretary of state, Dulles, started doing all the government paperwork, and they were just about to send a wire to the CIA authorizing the removal of Diem and a named replacement. But the same time everything's going on in D.C., a spontaneous event occurred in Vietnam that saved Diem. A war literally would erupt in the capital. And it's known as the Battle of Saigon, 1955. As we know, the emperor gave control of the police to Bien Xin, that cartel, if you will. But Diem wants to control the police. Plus, Diem learns that the Binh Duyên had made an alliance with the Cao Dai and the Hoa Hoa. They form basically an independent military force, which they call the United Front of National Forces. The goal of the United Front was basically to raise an army and topple the regime. When Diem heard about it, he issued an ultimatum. He told them to surrender and to come under state control. Of course, the gang refused. They ignored the Prime Minister's orders and continued their operations. And then Diem made a fateful decision. Around 11 a.m., on April 25th, 1955, the VNA goes on the move. Soldiers are deployed throughout the city, and they start going after Bien Xuyen headquarters, sites. It starts off with small arm fire, rifles, machine guns, but soon you start hearing a thump, the sound of mortars dropping, the tube fired up, and explosions. And before long, military armored vehicles are roaming through the streets, taking out the gang's sights. By mid-morning on the 25th, the end of day on the 25th, thousands of civilians are going out in the streets saying, what the hell is going on? Many of them getting caught in the crossfire. In total, in the chaos, 500 civilians were killed and nearly 20,000 were left homeless. On just the first day of fighting alone, 300 soldiers from both sides were killed. But it was short and sweet. By day two, the VNA had gained the upper hand. They managed to capture some of the biggest weapons caches and many of the high-ranking members of Bien Xuyen.
By May 2nd, the cartel is broken. They're forced to retreat from Saigon. Their command structure completely beheaded. On May 3rd, Diem declared he was in control of the city. Well, if Diem, with a ragtag group of VNA soldiers, can crush this powerful cartel that had been controlling the city for 50 years, maybe we should just give him another shot. So in the end, Ike decided to reject Collins' arguments and instead stick with Diem. As Secretary of State Dulles would state in a hearing before Congress, and I quote, "Diem was now a popular hero. He, rightly or wrongly, is a living symbol of Vietnamese nationalism, struggling against French colonialism and corrupt backward elements." Well, needless to say, Diem learns of this, and he knows he's the man. So what does he do? He pushes for more. Board flips. Any questions on this slide? So after crushing the cartel, what does he do? Well, he consolidates power. With the Bien Xuyen crushed, he quickly began sending VNA units out into the countryside to attempt to disrupt and hopefully destroy the Cao Dai and the Hoa Ho. He also, in the early summer of 1955, declares there is going to be no national unification election in the state of Vietnam. This, of course, was a direct violation of the gentlemen's agreement in the Geneva Accords. But Diem says, essentially, that it's not safe, that the communists are everywhere. So the only way to ensure freedom is to postpone the elections, which would never come. That did win him some more support, by the way, because a lot of the people in the South did not want to risk losing and coming under the control of Ho Chi Minh. Well, feeling this big rush, this big ego boost, he decides to go for it all. In October 1955, he holds a plebiscite, a non-binding referendum, like a big popular opinion poll. And he basically asked the people of South Vietnam, what do you think about the monarchy? What do you think about our constitutional monarchy? Well, 98% of the votes that were cast voted to get rid of Bo Dai, to send the emperor packing. Now here's the catch. I have never seen a free and fair election where the results are so determining. There were many, many, many claims of fraud. The biggest one that is easiest to see is the fact that the total number of votes that were cast exceeded the number of registered voters by over 400,000. So as the old saying goes, it's not about who wins or loses elections, it's about who counts the votes. So is it possible that more people voted to keep the emperor? Absolutely. Just didn't show up in the tally. So, Bo Dai, facing the referendum, abdicated. Diem would take full control. He would declare the end of the state of Vietnam, and it would be replaced by the Republic of Vietnam. The RVN. Diem would serve as the first president, and he called for the drafting of a constitution and the creation of an assembly, like a Congress. But of course, neither occurred. Diem stymied the production of the Constitution and stymied the National Assembly. Because truth be told, what President Diem did was create an authoritarian regime. He basically created an oligarchy. This new state would be run by Diem and his closest family members. For example, the official advisor to the president, Ngo Dinh Nhu, who was Dien's brother. Nhu was a French-educated intellectual, but he also was an admirer of Hitler. He loved him some serious Nazis. He was fascinated by totalitarianism. He was fascinated how the Nazis basically took control of Germany. Which, by the way, my World War II and Holocaust class might run in the fall, so if you need another history elective. So, Nhu basically would use the techniques that the Hitler used to control Germany, and he would put it in place of Vietnam. Now, he would make it try to appear legit. He would create a political party. But the political party was nothing more than a bunch of spies and secret agents. And all of the members of Nhu's party the government and the army and spy on everybody. And Nhu would use that information to give his brother the means to wipe out any potential threats. Aiding Nhu was his wife, Madame Nhu, who was known as the Dragon Lady. She was flamboyant. She was outspoken. She was an aggressive defender of the regime. She also was a moralist, meaning she poo-pooed people who didn't share the same values as her. Well, she would be put in charge of a department called the Women's Solidarity Movement. That government agency would be used to basically keep women in their place. You also had another one of Diem's brothers, Ngo Dinh Khan. By the way, if you haven't noticed, the Vietnam last name
is their first name. That's why I'm calling Gem Khan Nu. Because it's flipped. So Khan would be given control of the new police force. And now that everyone is out of their way, this new police force would basically maintain law and order for Diem. But Khan didn't believe in things like due process of law. So his police force was as bad as what was there previously. And it was very common. If the police here suspected bad activity, they'd just come to your house, break your door down, drag you out, sometimes shoot you right out on the street. And then if that was not enough, one of Dien's other brothers, Ngô Dinh Phuc, happened to be the Archbishop of South Vietnam. Looks real priestly, doesn't he? That slimy looking smile with a big cigar in his hand. Well, I'm sure none of us are naive to believe that the church would never engage in politics. Well, what came down from his masses was, listen to my brother. So, you infect all of the government with spies and agents. You impose morality. You use blunt force and you use the church. These and others, because he had dozens of relatives that he put in power, basically, they started acting like the old kings used to. Put all their relatives in positions of power and you control everybody. And by the way, they did. In 1955, they seized control of a nation that had a population of 16 million people. Two-thirds of which lived in Saigon, within the Mekong Delta. One third of it lived on the narrow tip going up to Hue, up to the 17th parallel. So long as they could control the southern part, they controlled most of the country. But the problem was the inlands. Just as in the north, the interior of South Vietnam was very mountainous. And in those mountains were tiny ethnic minorities. One group was called Montagnards, which translates to mountain people. They were basically kind of like natives that lived in the mountains and in the jungles, and they wanted nothing to do with the modern society and this new government. So, Dien started falling into the same trap that the French were in. You control the cities, but you can't control the countryside. Plus, the new government had to deal with what the French had done. Saigon had been the primary base of operations for the French, going back to when the French first arrived in the 1850s. In and around Saigon were huge French-styled villas, Catholic churches. Plus, there were all those public works that we talked about. All of the canals and the... It was all built by the French. Plus, there were still all the plantations that were there. Rubber, tea, still owned by French. So this government would be getting political power, police power,
but they still didn't control the economy. And you had to deal with the people themselves. The Vietnamese people were analogous to what some of your friends may have become when they left the shelter of mom and dad's home and went off to college. Now, I know you can't get into too much trouble here, but kids who go to some of the biggest colleges in the country have a tendency to be less focused on academics and have a tendency to run wild. Well, these Vietnamese people did not have the experience of democracy. They didn't understand about elections. They didn't understand about free speech, freedom of press. They had never been allowed to govern themselves because the French controlled everything. Plus, the French soldiers, or the French trained the Vietnamese soldiers, the Vietnamese soldiers trained by the French, that makes more sense, were just incompetent. They didn't have good guns. They didn't have effective officers. So, you had this new government that tried taking control of everything, but all the people were just kind of like, So as a result, the people didn't care about Dien. They weren't loyal to him. The people also didn't view themselves as Vietnamese, South Vietnamese. They say associated themselves based on whatever village they lived in or whatever religion they had. So long story short, they were not willing to make sacrifices for the good of the state. And truth be told, Dien was not a people person. He was not a consensus builder. He was good at attacking enemies, both real and imagined, but he was awful in reaching out to the people. And he didn't care about their needs. So again, if the police showed up and dragged somebody out of their house, beat them, and then shot them on the streets, he didn't care. He had no sympathy. At the end of the day, if you're a leader of a country, you gotta be there for your people. Because if not, the people will turn on you. And unfortunately, that would eventually happen to Diem, but we're not there yet. Questions? Now, what about his desire to fight communism? Well, he hated the commies. And once he got rid of Bao Dai, once he took control of the state, he began launching what were publicly proclaimed as being denunciation of communists campaign, or the denunciation of communist campaign. He would deploy his police, his army, and they would attempt to crush all of the remnants of the Viet Minh that was still in South Vietnam. By the way, they also went after anybody, even non-communists, who were perceived to be political enemies. He did it legally. He passed Ordinance Number 6. Under Ordinance Number 6, anyone who was considered a threat could be arrested and jailed without trial. And with no constitution, it was not like what we have, due process. He didn't get a fair trial. He didn't appear before a judge.
The police would just come and get you. So you're gonna dare say anything against the regime?
The denunciation campaign would last roughly about 2 years. And overall, it was kind of successful. They did manage to cause significant damage to the Viet Minh strongholds that were still in the South. So much so, it's estimated that the total number of Viet Minh agents, which was in about 20,000 when Diem started this, dropped to below 5,000. So in addition to wiping out 15,000 of them, dead by the way, another 50,000 were jailed. And he used this campaign to justify pushing out in the countryside. He sent his troops out there. He shut down local village councils. And then put in outside officials to watch everyone's behavior. So imagine the government coming into your town all of a sudden and taking control. To make matters worse, during the Indo-Chinese War, the communists had engaged in land redistribution. They took the land from the wealthy landlords and they gave it or sold it to supporters of the Viet Minh. Well, when Diem sent his guys out into the countryside, they reversed that. So all of the land was seized again, and the peasants were kicked off, and it was returned to the landlords. Which probably got them very angry. So as a result, Diem set himself up for the inevitable. Short term, things did stabilize. And by the time the French withdrew, at the end of 1956, he was in control, supported by the United States. But on the long term, he also sowed the seeds of his own demise. Granted, they did it quietly and in hushed tones, but the Vietnamese would soon paint Diem as a tyrant. And what do you do with tyrants? Kill them. Questions? Well, as Diem started looking like he knew what he was doing, the Eisenhower administration began to pay less and less attention to Vietnam. Because, if you look at a historical timeline of the Cold War, 1955, 1956, 1957, there is some very bad, chaotic things going on. Not that you need to remember any of them, but I just wrote down five big ones. The Soviet Union would push down into the Middle East and would start giving military aid to Syria. So it was possible that communism was going to be implanted in the Middle East, disrupting the flow of oil. Soviet Union created the Warsaw Pact, forcing all of the Eastern European countries to build up military forces to counter NATO. Just at the same point when Allied troops are pulling out of Western Germany, pulling out of Austria. But those two new countries would be invited to join NATO. So essentially, you're setting off that division in Europe.
There also was a violent rebellion by the Hungarians. The Hungarians wanted to break away out of the Soviet bloc.
But the Soviets would crush it when they literally rolled tanks out. Shot, squished Hungarian protesters.
And then if that was not bad enough, crisis erupted in the Suez.
Britain almost went to war against the Egyptians because the Egyptians threatened to close the Suez Canal to all global traffic. So it was really bad everywhere around the world. So this little tiny little country of South Vietnam completely fell off the radar. And as a result, the administration stopped setting clear policy. But they continued to pump in the money. By 1956, two-thirds of South Vietnam's budget is paid for by American money.
Most of that money made its way to the military.
Dien wanted an army like when I was a kid, I used to collect army men. I wanted my soldiers, I wanted my little tanks and my jeeps. But what he should have done is he should have spent that money on economic development, infrastructure, to create a self-sustaining economy, to look out for the people.
Of course, the greatest irony is that South Vietnam basically became an American protectorate, which is what all of the nationalists wanted to resist when the French basically had control.
Don't be afraid to give him a little shove if he starts sleeping. Drool was coming out of your mouth, man. And speaking of the shiny new toys, in the fall of 1955, Dien decided to basically scrap his original army and replace it with a new army, which he called the Army of the Republic of Vietnam, the ARVN.
This army would be rebooted, reorganized, rebranded.
MAG would be given full control to train and equip. It would build an army of 150,000 soldiers. But the Americans made it in the model of the American army. The army that won the war in Europe. The army that won the world in, well, at least drove the communists back in Korea. It was a road-bound army with heavy equipment, heavy weapons.
They were trained in World War II tactics. The expectation is there would be a battle, a fixed position battle, where the two armies would come in close contact and would begin slugging it out. Men in one color uniform would be fighting men in another color uniform. You know, just like the GIs did against the Nazis. Just like the GIs did against the Japs.
In charge of this operation for 5 years was MAG head, General Samuel T. Williams. Williams was a highly decorated command combat officer. I mean, look at his rack. Some serious ribbons there.
He had fought in World War II. He actually led a division of soldiers that landed in Normandy, D-Day plus one. He didn't do the actual invasion. But from Normandy, he actually drove his forces and eventually got all the way into Germany. He also fought in Korea. It was his idea. Let's make the ARVN carbon copy of the United States Army. But you know what he didn't understand? He didn't understand counterinsurgency warfare. Because he did not foresee that when the North came, they would not be guys in uniforms driving down the road in trucks, rolling in tanks, in artillery. He knew nothing about guerrilla warfare or revolutionary tactics. And what he did know, little he did know, apparently, he didn't even think it was worth even contemplating about. Because he didn't believe that a peasant-based insurgency hiding in jungles could topple an American-made military force. Damn, was he wrong. History, hindsight, 2020. Well, while this was going on, DM just let it go. He loved it. Like I said, he was me. When I was like 8, I got on my little army men. My little green soldiers, my little gray soldiers, all little tanks, got some planes. Set them up, up in my backyard. Good guys on one side, bad guys on the other. He thought this was beautiful. And he fully intended on using his tool to basically crush his opponents. But guess what? If you've never fought in war, you don't understand war. I hate to break it to you. Playing video games isn't going to make you be able to survive on the battlefield. Unless you're one of those high-tech drone operators. Leading soldiers is more than just moving pieces around on a board. And DM just didn't get it. Instead of focusing on merit, all of his high-ranking officers were puppets, yes men, that were loyal to him and not their soldiers. He also created confusion. Oftentimes, he would put 3 officers in charge of the same unit. Nobody knew who was actually in charge. Well, he did it so he could play each one off of one another. He also ordered that all of the units have radios with them that were wired into his palace. So it was very frequent that the ARVN was out in operation and the president was on the phone, basically telling the soldiers which way to go and what to do. Again, unless you fought war, this means nothing. But I can tell you it doesn't work. And I think this might be the last click of the day. Let me see what comes up next. Hold on. No, almost done. And to make matters worse, all of his puppets, they weren't trained by the Americans. They were trained by the French. So the Americans are sitting there training the soldiers to fight the American way, and all the officers, the only experience they have is the way the French fought. And how do the French fight wars? they fight them to lose. When was the last time the French won a war?
And finally, making things even more complicated, MAG began demanding that they start training the officers.
But the senior officers, loyal to DM, did not participate in these trainings. So what you would end up having is lackeys and then trained officers. But the trained officers did not have operational control. The lackeys did. So even though they had men that could effectively fight the war, they weren't given the ability to do so.
So, on paper, the ARVN looked formidable. Looked like the American military. They wore American uniforms. They had American rifles, armed mostly with M14s. They had American jeeps. They had American armored personnel carriers. They had American experts planted with them in the units. But the MAG officers' tours of duty only were 11 months. So once the guys made connections with the soldiers, trying to build up that bond, band of brotherhood bond, their tour would go end and they'd go home. And then the next guy would come in from America and he'd basically have to start all over from scratch. So even though the soldiers were receiving training, the MAG representatives never got to know the men. They never understood the culture. They never understood the language. They had to rely on translators. And as a result, what they did was quickly undone by the guy who came after them. So, he's got his toys. Just not gonna work. Questions? All right, we're gonna come back on Tuesday with a little more to say about South Vietnam, and then we're gonna start talking about North Vietnam. Okay? All righty.